Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to an action-packed Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, of course, it's a midterm election year. And, Jim, it was early last month that we made Mark Pryor, the vulnerable Democratic senator from Arkansas, the bad martini, because as he was being interviewed by NBC News, he said that he was very honoring of his Republican opponent's military service. His Republican opponent is Arkansas Republican Congressman Tom Cotton. But as the interviewer from NBC pressed on, Pryor got himself in a little bit of trouble. Here's how that went.
But you don't see it as a qualification to become a senator?
No. There's a lot of people in the Senate that didn't serve in the military. In the Senate, we have all kinds of different people, all kinds of different folks who have come from all kinds of different backgrounds. And I think that's part of this sense of entitlement that he gives off, is that almost it's like, I serve my country, therefore let me to the Senate. That's not how it works in Arkansas.
Well, Tom Cotton's not taking that lying down. Here's his brand new TV ad.
Senator Pryor says my military service gives me, quote, a sense of entitlement. So I brought in an expert.
Did I say at ease, Cotton?
I met Sergeant Norton at basic training.
It's still Drill Sergeant Norton, Cotton. At ease.
Drill Sergeant Norton taught me how to be a soldier. Accountability, humility, and putting the unit before yourself. That training stuck.
It better have. Now what, Cotton?
Permission to speak?
Speak, Cotton.
I'm Tom Cotton. I approve this message.
You're on thin ice, Cotton.
So, Jim, great lighthearted tone there, but the message, pretty much a dagger at the Pryor campaign.
Yeah, I mean, Pryor was not looking great beforehand. That was really an unforced gaffe. And let me just kind of observe, if you're an incumbent and you're facing a challenger who has served in the military, there's two things you can say. The first is say, well, as much as I disagree with my opponent, I want to thank him for his service to this country, and then pivot. Change the topic to anything else. Hey, did you catch Game of Thrones? You know, anything like that to avoid talking about this. Because inevitably, you'll probably say something that sounds like you're being critical of it. And if you really definitely need to address this, there's a good anecdote about when Eisenhower took over the presidency from Truman. And Truman kind of chuckled a bit. And he said, you know, he thinks this is going to be like the military where he says do something and people will automatically do something. Now, I think most people would say Eisenhower's presidency was a pretty successful one. But you can speak in a very vague manner about the differences between the culture of the military and the culture of our politics and differences there. But you don't say anything that sounds, you know, critical of your opponent. You certainly don't say he's got a sense of entitlement. This is a good, funny ad that makes people like Tom Cotton. It's kind of funny. You know, he's got his former drill sergeant kind of still giving him grief. It reminds people about the senator's remark. And it just is, it's this way. There are a lot of ads you get shown. And if you're a diehard partisan, okay, you'll watch it and it's fine. That's just a fun ad to watch, even if you're not that into politics. I guess because Cotton's willing to show himself still being answering to somebody and still being not cowed by his drill sergeant, but let's just say sufficiently respectful of this tough drill sergeant. And, you know, again, very probably the exact opposite of a sense of entitlement that comes across in that commercial.
More on the midterm elections coming up in our Crazy Martini. On to the bad now. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is a proud, frequent member of the Crazy Martini, was on Meet the Press this Sunday. David Gregory asking her about issues that are going to be challenging for Democratic candidates in the midterm elections, and one of them being Obamacare. And one of them was the Keystone Pipeline. And here's a little bit of a montage of the back and forth between Gregory and Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Isn't it true that because the president can't get a big law to combat climate change, he doesn't want to upset those environmentalists who would really be upset with him if he approved Keystone?
What's true is the decision over the Keystone Pipeline is complex, and it's one that has to be examined very carefully. It affects multiple states.
Will the president approve Keystone in the end? Should he?
I think he has to continue to take a close look at it. The environmental concerns are legitimate. The economic concerns are legitimate.
Are you worried as the party chair that this shouldn't be resolved before the election because of the potential impact it could have on vulnerable Democrats?
I want to make sure that the right decision is arrived at and that the president makes that decision carefully and doesn't factor politics into his decision, which I don't think he is.
Is the issue in the fall a referendum on President Obama?
No, absolutely not.
Jim, where do you want to start?
The first thing I'll just kind of observe is that as much as we can point to Debbie Wasserman Schultz for our bad martini is an, oh my goodness, can you believe she said this? But increasingly, Greg, you know, oh my God, can you believe Debbie Wasserman Schultz said this? Yeah, I can. I mean, when there's a message that not even Harry Reid can try carrying water on, when not even Nancy Pelosi will touch it, when not even Joe Biden is willing to say something that crazy, there's always Debbie Wasserman Schultz who will step up to the plate and make the most implausible and ludicrous. When this administration needs somebody to insist there are no American tanks in Baghdad, Debbie Wasserman Schultz will be there. And so, in a way, it's not that surprising. What's really kind of intriguing about that answer is how much she dances around. I mean, like, Greg, how many years have we been talking about Keystone?
Oh, well over five, at least.
It's not like, you know, I mean, fracking is going on everywhere, and the Canadians are going whole hog with this, and the Chinese, it's not like demand for oil went away or anything. And there's a very basic question. Okay, State Department, because it's an international project. Okay, government, can we build this pipeline or not? And here we are 5 years later, and the administration and the government is still saying, nah, we don't know. We'll let you know. There are animals that have turned into fossil fuels in slightly less time than it takes this administration. I exaggerate slightly, but most people take my point. So here she is, and she's got to answer. Like, if the answer was no, just say no. I mean, you know, and then you get, you know, administration get a lot of grief and aggravation. Right now, the administration is delaying potential jobs. If they say, no, you can't build the pipeline, well, then they kill jobs, right? And there were jobs that were ready to go, ready to be created. Lo and behold, no, they don't want to do it because of environmental concerns. And really, Tom Steyer, this environmentalist billionaire, who's basically decided to make this his crusade, unless you're a Democrat and you vote for it, then it's okay. Then he's not going to run ads against you. But if you're a Republican, he's going to run ads against you. But so here's the administration policy. Basically, you know, one of the biggest donors to Democrats has said this is his priority, and the administration keeps kicking the can down the road. And they have to insist that there's nothing political about it. It genuinely is in the best interest of policy and the best, you know, analysis interest to go on for 5 years to do this. And I think it's pretty implausible. But then again, as I said at the beginning, pretty implausible is what Debbie Wasserman Schultz does best.
Yes. I also love the fact that the thing she's most concerned about is that politics don't enter in as chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee.
Yeah.
Very, very, very believable statement there. All right. On to the crazy martini now. Charlie Crist, he's going to be a frequent resident here, I think, over the next few months. The issue now of which he has apparently flip-flopped, it would appear to be now for at least the second time, is on the issue of abortion, because, of course, Crist was a longtime Republican, and now he's a Democrat trying to get his old job back and trying to pretend that he's not changing his position on most of the major issues. Abortion is the latest one. Here's Charlie Crist, first of all, in 1998, while getting thumped by Democratic Senator Bob Graham, Tim Russert asking a debate question.
As a Republican senator, would you support a constitutional amendment to ban all abortion?
No, I would not. I think this is a very personal decision, and I think it is a decision that a woman should make and have the right to make after consulting with her family, her physician, and her clergy, but not her government.
So that would suggest a pro-choice position. Here's him running for governor in 2006.
It's important to understand these important issues and this important question. As I said earlier, I want you to know that Charlie Crist is pro-life. I think it's fundamentally important that we get past the rhetoric, that we understand the principle of what we're talking about here. I am somebody who respects life. I believe that being pro-life is very important. It certainly is important to me.
And here is Charlie Crist as the heat from Marco Rubio was mounting in 2010.
But I am pro-life, I'm pro-gun, I'm pro-family, and I'm anti-tax. And I always have been. And I think that's abundantly clear. That's what people want. Somebody who'll just tell them the truth.
Somebody who'll just tell them the truth. Now here's Charlie Crist getting pressed on the fact that he now claims that he is okay with abortion once again.
In the heat of campaigns, you were once quoted, listen, I'm pro-life, I'm pro-gun, on and on and on. You've changed your view on abortion as well.
Well, that's not true. No, I am pro-life. By my definition.
But you've changed,
if I might,
you've
if
changed
I might.
Your mind on abortion restrictions in the state of Florida. That's
I won't
a
interrupt
matter of
you
record.
If you won't interrupt me. Please, sir. I am pro-life. And what I mean by that is I'm for life. I think most of us are for life. And I think that's very important to state, because even though I am pro-life, which I mean for life, doesn't mean that I want to tell a woman what to do with her body, and I never have.
Jim, I guess this whole sequence shows that he'll say whatever he thinks he needs to say, but that tortured explanation just takes it to a new level.
You know, if people could just listen to that 3 minutes of audio you put together, I really think you'd be surprised Charlie Crist got a single vote in Florida. I want to salute you for your excellent archive research skills. His most recent one was the one yesterday. And here's the thing. There are a lot of ways where you can say, look, I've evolved on this issue, like the president did on gay marriage, or I've been thinking about, I had a conversion on the road to Damascus, you know, God spoke to me, Nehru spoke to me, you know, whatever it is that makes you say, okay, I changed my mind. What really makes, you know, gives Charlie Crist that little cherry on top, that, like, I should say just an orange on top, is that he's the guy who basically says, and I've always felt this position. And what he means allegedly in this explanation is that he always meant, when he said he was pro-life, he meant he was for life, which apparently he translates as not believing in any legal restrictions on abortion whatsoever, which is not really matching the colloquial definition of pro-life, nor how most self-identified pro-lifers see themselves. And so, like, I just want to go up to Florida Democrats and say, really? Really? You're going to vote for this guy? I mean, bad enough they voted against this guy, or most of them did, in 2010 for Senate and 2006 for governor. And I believe 2004 or 2002 for another office, I want to say maybe state attorney general.
Right.
And he's like state insurance commission. Like, he's been running as a Republican candidate for the past decade. So if you're a loyal Florida Democrat, you've been voting against Charlie Crist for most of the past decade. And now, okay, he's our guy. And if you're a pro-choice Florida Democrat, and I assume most Florida Democrats are pro-choice, here's a guy who's voted against your position in the past and said that he was going to ban all abortions except for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And now he says he's always been on your side, and you're just going to nod. Okay, sounds good. Yeah, thumbs up, Matt. You know, he's either stupid or he thinks you're stupid. I think it's very much that latter category. And I just am kind of struck by Florida Democrats just kind of, you know, like, how much of a drone do you have to be? How much of a lockstep marching, I would say snail, but snails don't really march in lockstep. But you get the idea. This generally accepting guy to say, okay, Charlie Crist says he's on my side now. That's good enough for me. I mean, the issue is not, is he bought? The real concern is, will he stay bought? And I suppose it's not like, you know, pro-lifers probably would say that even the whole time he was proclaiming he was pro-life because pro-lifers kind of doubted that he genuinely was pro-life. Now he's insisting he always was pro-choice all along. Look, Charlie Crist is whatever will help him at that particular moment. And I really can't believe that anybody in Florida is really all that enthusiastic about voting for this guy.
Let's hope not. We'll find out. But as we've mentioned in the past, the polls showed him doing much better earlier in this campaign. And right now it seems to be pretty much a dead heat. And so hopefully as the economy gets even better down there, Rick Scott will look even better in the polls. But Jim, fun day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Jim will be here tomorrow. Brett Winterbull in for me. Please join them then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.